friends, Greg Kokel here. Show is Stand to Reason, of course, and this is the last day of broadcasting for this year for me. We'll be doing two shows today. That means this week, Wednesday show and the Thursday show. The Friday show. Those are the days you'll receive those on your podcast. Of course, you will get those this week, and next week there will be no STR-esque show, okay? We will be celebrating and, after a fashion, relaxing, enjoying time off with my family. There will be STR-esque, though, just to let you know, because we have already recorded those. They're in the can, and so you'll receive those as you normally do. And by the way, for those of you who are listening to this show on a regular basis and you have not checked out STR Ask and you like this show because you like me, in STR Ask, make that hashtag STR Ask. You get the bonus of Miss Amy. And Miss Amy's a fabulous addition to that enterprise. She's on the phone right now taking callers, but she brings so much to that special podcast twice a week, about 20 to 25 minutes each podcast. But I encourage you to check that out. You can find it on our website or at iTunes or wherever it is that you find podcasts. Just wanted to commend that to you. But we will be having those next year. Now, there are two things that I don't usually do on a broadcast, and one is to kind of extol our virtues or flash our bona fides for you in some fashion, though once in a while things will come up that are pretty cool and we'll let you know about it, like I just did another podcast or broadcast with Focus on the Family on Friday, and that will be aired next time, sometime next year. But in any event, most of the time we're not kind of waving our own flag. That's one thing we don't usually do. Another thing is we don't talk about money much on this radio show. And we don't talk about our need for your financial support, all right? Just not my style. But this time of year, I want to do both. I want to talk a little bit about what we've done, and I want to ask you for your financial help. But first, I want to set a picture for you a little bit. And to some degree, it's something that you are generally familiar with, and this is why you listen to this show. But you're going to need to fasten your seatbelts a little bit for this, because what I'm about to read stunned me when I read it too. And that is, according to the most recent American Worldview Inventory by Arizona Christian University, and they do this every year, according to them, this year, 2 out of 3 Americans self-identify as Christians, which, wow, that's really good news until you read the fine print. Only 9% who think they are Christians hold even a modest, watered-down, biblical worldview. Oh, 9%. Well, at least we got the 9%. Wait a minute. That's 9 of the two-thirds, so that's about 6% total. Then read that fine print. 1/4 of those so-called integrated disciples, that's how they characterize them in the poll, reject absolute moral truth. So if you reject absolute moral truth, what do you make of sin? 1/4 of those integrated disciples don't believe in sin. 39% deny a real Holy Spirit. Huh? No Trinity? 42% believe that having faith matters more than which faith you have. So no need for Jesus in almost half of those who are considered by the poll as integrated disciples. And the number of don'ts regarding God, that is, don't believe, don't know, or don't care, has skyrocketed. And this kind of sums up in the simple phrase, trouble in the world and trouble in the church. Trouble in the world and trouble in the church. And you've seen that, the massive numbers of Christians who are confused or faltering without a foundation, okay? And that is why we are here. And we have been preparing for the moment we face right now for 28 years. Indeed, we were made for this moment. And we have a very particular resolve at Stand to Reason, and our resolve is not to do this alone. It is to do this with the partners, like many of you who are listening, who stand with us, and that is to stand in the gap, and that is to silence the lies that are coming fast and furious, and that is to oppose, as Paul puts it, the spiritual forces of wickedness in heavenly places. That is to protect the sheep from the bullies in the world and from the wolves in our midst, and there are a lot of wolves. And also to tear down those strongholds, those lofty ideas raised up against the knowledge of God that Paul talks about in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. And we want to do that with the one weapon that defeats every lie, the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. All right? And we are doing that. Stand to Reason is doing that in, I think, shrewd and creative ways. And to give you an example of that, here's what we have been able to accomplish in 2021. We have boxed the compass nationally with Reality Student Apologetics Conferences. And we have scheduled events in Los Angeles and Seattle and Minneapolis and Dallas and Augusta, Georgia and Philadelphia as we are working to aggressively pass the baton to the next generation. We have watched Mr. B's Red Pen Logic explode with 30,000 subscribers. And I just heard the other day that one of the RPLs that he did had 1 million views. That's how popular it is. And in that enterprise RPL, we are teaching not just what to think, but we are helping you learn how to think in the process. We have launched STRU with 7 courses and counting. In fact, I just got a note today that, January 5th, we have 2 new courses that are going to launch. Atheism Bumping into Reality, I did that one. And The Problem of Evil, that's John Noyes' class, okay? So that's another thing that we've done. We have trained people in Albania, for example. Alan did this. These are Middle East Christian leaders who went to Albania and are being trained, were trained, rather, to face the daunting challenges that were confronting them in their own countries. We couldn't do as much traveling this year as we've done in the past, but Alan made that trip. And I made our case on Focus on the Family Radio in 2 different broadcasts and also on the popular Colson What Would You Say series. And I think we did 5 or 6 of those on tactics. Through the internet, we trained and strengthened believers with hundreds of podcasts and dozens of online events all over the country and also in Russia and in England and in Canada and in Ireland. But we're not just resting on those laurels. We have big plans for next year as well. We're going to be expanding the Tactics franchise with the release of another book. It's called Street Smarts, Using Questions to Answer Christianity's Toughest Challenges. My due date is April 1st. I'm chuckling because it's April Fool's Day, and I hope I can meet that date. Appreciate some prayer on that one. But in any event, that's coming out along with a companion workbook and a video series. We're going to be releasing more STRU online courses. We are going to roll out a new wave of the wildly popular Red Pen Logic. We are going to increase our cadre of excellent and effective speakers. We are going to launch what we call an outpost strategy, local clubs, as it were, of Stand to Reason people in different parts of the country and different parts of the world. And we're going to continue our podcast, 20 per month at the moment, and our blogs and our videos and our special STR online events and hundreds of appearances online and in person. And we can do that because we have friends like you who we keep equipping and who help us equip others with the spiritual weapons and the armor of God for the battle that's mounting before us. And we do so confidently and with certainty and with full conviction because our God is with us. And he's been with us for 28 years and counting. And it's been a bull market for Stand to Reason all that time. And that's a good news and bad news. We're hard at work. That's good news. But we've got a lot of work to do because of the challenges in the culture. And so we are facing the bad news head on, but we're not doing it alone. We are doing it with the partnership of good people like you. And many that I'm talking to are already partners with us. And if you're not, I just want to challenge you to consider being a financial partner with us in this fight that we're in. Now, we have a group of dedicated SDR partners that we call the Challenge Team, all right? And they have pledged $260,000. Actually, it's a little more than that, that they are giving this month as a group. And their goal is to challenge you and other friends to give generously to either collectively equal that or exceed that gift. Okay, that's their challenge to you. And I'm just asking if you'll accept the challenge and send a good, best gift today. And if you choose to, if you send your gift, it doesn't have to be today, but by the end of the year, I'm just challenging today. We're going to say thank you for your partnership, and I'm going to give you a signed copy of J. Warner Wallace's newest book. It's called Person of Interest, and in this book, well, Wallace shows how we can actually reconstruct every single detail that we know about the life of Jesus, even if every New Testament copy vanished. How can we do that? Because of the impact that Jesus has had on every facet of civilization. All right. And he goes into detail. There's no book out there that's like this. It's an amazing book. And I want to close with this thought here that everywhere I go, I see the results of spiritual deception. There are twisted views of human sexuality. There's radically narcissistic individualism in our culture. There's denial of intrinsic human value. There's theological illiteracy. There's deconversions. There is the relentless spread of totalitarianism that is crimping our freedoms to live the kind of Christian life that God has called us to live. And all of these things are banging away at our Christian foundations. And we are going to continue to strengthen those foundations in the lives of the Christians that we encounter, that we have contact with, that are part of our tribe, that are part of our Stand to Reason community. And we know that this moment does not belong to the world. It belongs to us. God made us, Stand to Reason, and you for this moment. And our goal is to rise thoughtfully and faithfully to the task, strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might, standing firm against those dark schemes and resisting in the evil day. And we want you to partner with us to do that. Now, the simplest way to do that is just go to str.org and check that out. That's our website. If you haven't looked lately, it's pretty cool. I looked at it today. But in the upper, on the top line, a little right of center, there's a heart with the word donate underneath. That's the simplest way to do it. You can also send us a letter if you want. Do the snail mail deal. And I'm not a good host here because I don't have our address right in front of me, but it shouldn't be hard to find if you want to do that. Many of you, we send out a mailer this time of year anyway. We send you things online. Lots of ways to respond. I'm just simply asking you, as my friends and listeners who benefited from what we do for a long time, I presume for many of you, and we are glad to give to you because our goal is always to ask, is to always give, rather, before we ask to receive. And so we give, and so now I'm asking to receive this month. And for a gift of any size, of course, I'll send you that book, a signed copy of J. Warner Wallace's A Person of Interest. All right. So please consider the challenge, the $260,000 challenge that a group of Christians associated with Stand to Reason have put together and pledged for this month, and they're challenging you. And if you let me hear from you by December 31st, I'll send you the gift that I promised. All right. Now, I have more things I want to share about Christmas, but I've opened with a fairly lengthy discussion about what we've done and make my request straightforward in a straightforward way to you. So let's take a quick break, and I'm going to go to some calls here, and then we'll talk about some more about Christmas a little later. Friends, if you like this broadcast, I know you'll love hashtag STRAsk. It's our shorter 20-minute podcast where I am paired with the wonderful Amy Hall, and together we answer the questions you send us on Twitter. Hashtag STRAsk is released twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays, and it's only about 20 minutes long, so it's perfect to listen to on your morning jog or while driving around running errands or cleaning your garage or just plain loafing at home. Amy and I tackle your questions on theology and ethics and culture and lots more, offering our insight on the questions you're asking or the challenges you face. You can listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your own shows. Just remember, send us your questions on Twitter using the name of the podcast, hashtag STRAsk. That's hashtag STRAsk.
Have you seen our brand new website? Stop by str.org and enjoy a fresh, clean layout with all the same great content. The new Stand to Reason website was designed with you in mind. It has an easier-than-ever navigation and a crisp, simple layout so you can find all the sound analysis and careful commentary that you've come to expect from us. Browse new features that make finding your favorite resources easier than ever. As always, it's our goal to equip you, our fellow Christians, with a confidence, clear thinking, and courage you need for every encounter you have as a Christian ambassador. Our new website is just one way we're fulfilling that goal, allowing you to access the resources you need in a new and improved way. So visit str.org and keep coming back to discover new podcasts, articles, and videos each and every day.
Back at you. Craig Kokel here, Stand to Reason. And I'm going to say Happy Christmas to you now because I might forget at the end of the show. I think that happened one year. But let's go to some calls. And one of my favorite callers, Kate in Durango, Colorado, late of the, not the Rust Belt, but the Iron Belt in northern Minnesota. Kate, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mr. Kokel, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Yeah, I'm kind of gearing up for Christmas. I haven't finished every bit of shopping, but I've done most of it. I just have a lot of packages to wrap. And what has happened historically with me is it's like 10:30 or 11 o'clock on Christmas Eve, and there I am in my workshop with all these packages spread around, you know, and I'm laboring like crazy. So hopefully I'll get a couple of things done and wrapped before then. But how about you?
I'm doing well, excited for the Christmas season.
Yeah, well, it's not as cold and snowy in Durango as it was north of Duluth or wherever it was that you used to live, huh?
Iron Range, yeah.
Yeah, Iron Range. Oh, yeah, what do they call it? Iron Belt. Okay, Iron Belt. I think of the Rust Belt, Iron Belt. Okay, got it. All right. Although Durango is kind of pretty, too. You got mountains, you got elk, you do have snow there and everything. So.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so what's on your mind, Kate? It looks like you want to pick up where we left off on CRT.
Yeah, kind of like probably the final and third part of our conversation. But I just wanted to throw at you some objections that a critical theorist might throw your way.
Yeah, and one intervention here is critical theory, CRT, is in a certain sense, it is an abandoned acronym. People don't want to assert CRT anymore because they've gotten into so much trouble. There's been such an uprising that they say, well, we don't teach CRT. But what they've done is they've just adopted new names for the same material, like EI, equity and inclusion, or DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, or maybe it's DIE, diversity, inclusion, and equity. So just saying people should keep their ears open for these variations because they all amount to the same point of view that's being advanced.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So the first objection that I want to ask you about is if somebody came up to you and said all whites are inherently racist, and possibly, therefore, you cannot speak about this issue, how would you reply?
Well, I think you could probably anticipate my first question.
And what do you mean by that?
What do you mean? You mean in what's? What do you mean by racist? What do you mean by inherently? And what do you mean by white? And like those are all, they seem like simple questions that are easy to answer. But part of the problem here in these discussions is that all of the language has become changed and twisted and altered so that it serves a certain ideology. Now, when I ask that question, I'm not going to just put it as baldly as I just did there, but I'm going to try to be conversational about it. And so I'm going to say something. Wait a minute, wait. You mean then when you say that I'm white, you mean because I have light skin color? Is that what you mean, because I have light skin color? Yes, because part of the debate, part of the affirmation, that's not the word, assertion that is made by these folks is that race is a construct. There is no such thing as race. Okay, so are you talking about me as a white race, or just because my skin color is light? Because there's lots of people with. So I just want clarification. Basically, I want to get them to talk about what they mean. All right. Now, just a little hint here or a tip. This is going to be difficult because the people who raise these kinds of challenges are already annoyed, right? They're not interested. I don't think they're in the mood for having a discussion about the nature of racism in the United States. They are already making accusations against people usually they don't even know. They know nothing about that person except for their skin color, all right? And so, okay, that's why all whites. And then the inherently racist, what does that mean? And I need an explanation for that. Now, I understand to some degree what some people might have in mind who make this claim. And what they mean is that you are part of a class that has been historically oppressive and continues to oppress in the kind of structures of our culture that they have formed to continue structural oppression. And because you are part of that group, that makes you guilty with the group because you're benefiting from those structures. That's what white privilege is. Okay. So they're going to have to cash this out. Now, once they start cashing this out, then I have more questions. Okay. More questions that have to do with verification of these claims they're making. In what sense, for example, I want them to explain to me. I've just given you a little background there, Cade, but I want them to explain to me, why am I guilty because of the color of my skin? And here's another way. If a person wanted to be a little bit more, I was going to say aggressive, but that's not what I mean. I mean taking a little bit more risk. They might say something like this. Well, you're saying that I'm racist, I'm inherently racist, okay, because I'm white. What if I said that all Muslims are inherently violent? Or what if I said that all Jews are inherently avaricious? That means they're money grubbers or something like that. Or blacks are inherently lazy, all right, because this was a claim that was made back in the 50s with regards to blacks. Totally untrue. But this was a prejudicial, bigoted claim against a person because of his or her skin color. So my question is going to be, what is the difference between these claims? Those claims were considered abhorrent by virtuous people back when they were made, or even people might make these statements today, certainly about Muslims. So, and the statement about Jews, this was made by Germans in the Third Reich. But these are gruesome claims. But how are they any different than the claim whites are inherently racist? The color of your skin means you have a vice. So notice what I'm doing at this point is I'm not being defensive. No, I'm not racist. I'm asking them for clarification and verification. Tell me exactly what you mean, and then why am I guilty of this terrible thing called racism simply because my skin is a certain color? That seemed to be the kind of thing people said 50 years ago that were examples of them as bigoted racists. How is it that you can say that now to me and escape the same charge? See my sense there, where I'm going with that?
I do. And then to play devil's advocate, if they came back and told you, well, I can say you're racist because you are a part of the oppressor group, how would you maneuver that?
Well, no, why does that make me a racist? It's what's so ironic about that question is it's so completely foolish to look at a group of people characterized by a non-moral characteristic, their skin color, and then make a moral claim against the group of people. So once again, how is that any different than saying, all you're a Jew, you're avaricious? How is that any different? That's all they're saying. You have this vice because your skin is a certain color. And so I want to ask them, how is it that I become racist because you're part of that group? But you just repeated the same thing you said a moment ago. How is it that I'm because I'm part of a group of people with a certain skin pigmentation that you assume that I have a vice called racism? And the only way that they can make that stick, and this is part of the shell game going on here, is if they do it by definition. Okay, by definition. So now a person who says this is a leftist politically. What if we said all leftists are inherently dishonest and all leftists are liars? You're a leftist, that makes you a liar. So why should I believe anything you say? But what justifies me making that blanket claim? You see, people can say anything they want. All this are that. All this are that. But justifying it, verifying it, that's another issue entirely. And what has happened here is they have constructed a system which doesn't get defended in itself, this broader system of oppressor versus oppressee, the victim and the oppressors, then if you're a member of the group, that automatically makes you an oppressor. And this type, in this case, the kind of oppression is racism, okay? But why? Why would you call me that? And the reason is because the way they have constructed and defined the system. So I'm just offering a counterexample. You're a leftist, right? Well, all leftists are liars. I don't know why I should believe you. Why should I believe anything that you say? All leftists are liars. Okay, notice what I've done there. I don't believe all leftists are liars, by the way. But what I've done is I've just played their trick back on them.
All right. It's kind of like the second question. How'd you come to that conclusion?
That's right. That's all built in there. So that's what I want, clarification and verification. I've actually never said it like that before, but I like it. Clarification is Columbo number one. Verification is Columbo number two. In fact, I'm going to write it down. Clarification and verification, because that I'm going to be talking about this in my new book called Street Smarts. But in any event, yes,
all right.
That's right. Both questions are in play here, and that's why this game plan is so perfectly suited for this challenge. But I'm just going to underscore it. These challenges are not easy because people who raise these challenges are generally completely convinced of the their rightness and their high moral road that they're taking, and they are completely convinced of your guilt, the one that they're accusing. So I'm not suggesting the conversation is going to go well or smoothly, even if you raise legitimate questions.
All right. Okay, that sounds good.
Okay.
So my second objection is, and you kind of hinted at this a little bit,
right?
The first time we talked, is Christianity is oppressive religion. If you look at all the oppressive groups, Christians seem to be in a lot of them.
Okay, let me ask you a question then. I'm going to just role play this a little bit with you. You know how this works, Kate. So I'm going to say, so when you say Christianity is an oppressive religion, what do you mean it's oppressive?
Well, it pushes other people down, and it makes other people feel bad because they don't follow the same view that you do.
Oh, okay. So the ideas and teachings of Christianity are different from other people's beliefs. Is that right?
Precisely.
Okay, so if they are different from other people's beliefs, that difference makes the other people feel bad. Is that right? Am I reading?
Yes.
Okay. Why do they feel bad if somebody has a different belief than they do?
Because you need to be tolerant of other people's views.
No, well, but that doesn't answer the question, Kate. And again, for the listeners, we're just role-playing it. And you're doing a great job. But Kate, my question is, why, if there is a difference of opinion, why would that make you feel bad?
All right.
I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know the answer to that, but you feel bad because I have a different opinion from you. Now, you have a different opinion from me. Is that right?
Yes.
Doesn't make me feel bad. So why does it make you feel bad? Okay, no, maybe you can't answer that. Fine, think about that. But what if it did make me feel bad? Maybe your view made me feel bad. Would that make you the oppressor?
No.
Wait a minute, I'm confused now. Because first you said that my views as a Christian are different from other people. They disagree with them. That makes them feel bad. That makes me an oppressor. But those people have different views than I have, so they differ with me, and sometimes they're really nasty towards me, and that does make me feel bad. So why aren't they the oppressor when they do the same thing that I'm called an oppressor for doing? Okay, now, so we'll stop the role play for a second, but you see the point there.
Yeah.
Okay, here's what's going on. This whole thing, whether you call it tolerance or oppression or whatever you want, is a one-way street. All right? People with one set of values, and we'll just call them left for the sake of labeling them, and I think that's an accurate characterization. Not everybody on the left believes everything exactly the same, but these are characteristically leftist views. And so we are being accused, Christians, of being oppressive because our views disagree with people, but their views disagree with us. And when Christians express their views, sometimes they could be nasty, but not always. But when leftists express their views contrary to Christians, they're often nasty too. So why doesn't the same set of rules apply? And I'll tell you a strange conversation I had, Cade, once on this issue, and it was the issue of tolerance. And I said, why is it that when I think I'm right, I'm intolerant, but when you think you're right, you're just right and not intolerant? And twice in conversations, I've had people say to me, the reason that I'm not intolerant when I think I'm right is because I'm actually right. If you can believe that, that's what they said to me. All right. So this is a one-way street. And what they're doing is a shell game. It's leaning on you heavily for being bad, but they, in their leaning on you for being bad, they're doing exactly the same thing they're accusing you of doing. And sometimes it's much more aggressively done. All right. Now, I want to make one other observation here, And that is a change in this conversation, this broader conversation that we are having in our culture, and the meaning of the word oppression. It used to be that if I oppress you, I silence you. I take your job away from you. I make you sit in the back of the bus. I don't allow you to live in a certain neighborhood, etc., etc. So oppression were acts, physical, in a certain sense, physical acts against people to prevent them from exercising a kind of liberty, right? Bringing harm to those people. That's what oppression was. No coloreds allowed, meaning no black people. That was the way the sign was back in the 50s, all right? Or whites only. That would be an example of oppression. They were not allowed to go where they wanted to go or do what they wanted to do. And that's obviously, in my mind, examples of oppression. But that is not what people are talking about. And in fact, you characterize this perfectly. And you're not even a member of that group and hold that ideology, but you know what they're talking about when they say that Christianity is an oppressive religion. The ideas now, not the actions, the ideas are oppressive. The ideas are oppressive. If you hold a contrary idea, never mind how virtuously you act towards the other person, holding the contrary idea is enough to qualify you as an oppressor. Okay? You see the distinction there?
Yeah.
This is called oppression by ideology. And let me just add one other thought here, and then I'll let you jump in. Okay? And it's called, now oppression is ideology oppresses, not behavior, but ideology. So now if you have the wrong views, you are considered an oppressor. And what can a person do in response to your oppression? They can oppress you back, but they oppress not with contrary ideas, but with action. They can get you fired. They can keep you from participating. They can get you thrown off campus, and on and on, ad infinitum. They can silence you. They can even get you jailed in certain circumstances because your ideas are wrong. So do you see how the definition of oppression has changed to make people with the wrong ideas the oppressors, and those who differ can actually take oppressive action against the people with the wrong ideas, and they think they're doing just fine and everything's completely justified.
Okay, so then where did this even come from then, this idea that oppression is from ideology? Like today I could be called a homophobe for not agreeing with somebody about the issue of homosexuality, but I I'm not going around saying you're a bibliphobe or whatever you use
That's
for that
right.
kind of
or
word.
Christophobe or something like that, or a heterophobe. Exactly. Well, part of the reason you're not doing that is because you don't adopt those, and now I'm using my words very carefully, you don't adopt those oppressive techniques to silence people that disagree with you. This is not in our repertoire as Christians nowadays. There was a time when that did happen, but that's not the biblical teaching, and we are in favor of freedom of speech and the like because we think that's consistent with biblical virtue. They got the idea and it isn't like, I don't know, that just somebody just thought this up and let's do this, but it's something that gets these ideas shift over time and get absorbed by the culture, all right? This has to do largely with the feeling, with the idea of inclusion. We want people to feel included. We want people to feel at home and welcome. We want to include everybody. We don't want to segregate. We don't want to oppress. We want people to feel included, all right? Well, that sounds good. Okay, this is inclusion. But how is it that people feel excluded? People feel excluded when they get disagreed with or when they are behaving in a way that somebody says is wrong. Then they don't feel good. Then they're shamed. Then they're considered less than. Then they're put down because they have been told that what they're doing is wrong. And so if they feel shamed in Lessland because they have been told what they're doing is wrong, they certainly don't feel included. And now you're violating the principle of inclusion. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but then it kind of just seems like, well, then why aren't you including me by accepting my view?
Well, there you go. And once that was going to follow up with what you observed so accurately, that inclusion is a one-way street. It is all about a specific ideology, a very specific view of reality, a very specific way of understanding what is good and right and true. And that particular way has no patience and no room for any kind of diversity of ideas. If you have different ideas, you are silenced. You are shut down. You are taken out of the equation. You lose your job. You lose your opportunity to communicate. And there is a single word that captures all of those things. Do you know what that word is?
I don't believe so.
Yes, you do. It starts with a C. C-A. C-A-N. C-A-N-C-E-L-E-D. You are canceled.
Canceled. Okay, cancel culture, yeah.
The cancel culture. This is what the left does. The left is the cancel culture. And if you do not conform, then you are canceled. And canceled doesn't mean they disagree with you. Cancel means they do something to hurt you, to silence you, to take you out of the equation. And when they act to hurt you and silence you and take you out of the equation, that is the classical, actual, real definition of oppression. So they are not just oppressing with their ideas contrary to ours, they are also oppressing with their actions. And that is the loss of freedom that we see in our country in the last 10 years, and especially the last 4 or 5. And this is the creeping totalitarianism that I've been writing about all this year. It's a shell game, but it's unbelievable how many people are taken in by it. The way they're taken in by it is the demagoguery, the strong language that's used to advance it, okay? And the alternate views are silenced aggressively and sometimes violently. These are characteristics of a totalitarian system. The difference in our case, Cade, is the totalitarianism isn't coming so much from the government. There are broad institutions that are far left that are willing to do the dirty work for a government system right now whose rulers have the same view. But they don't have to step in and arrest you when a company will fire you for the wrong ideas. Or you'll lose your opportunity to get an education. You're taken off campus. This happened in the Soviet Union when I was there, when there was a Soviet Union in 1976. The Christians were not allowed to go to the university and get in the good programs because they were Christians. They had the wrong ideas. And now you have the exact same kind of thing. Christians with the wrong ideas who are being pilloried in public and removed from positions of responsibility because they say the wrong things. They are canceled. Totalitarian oppression, it's happening right here.
It's really more, it's a lot more than just the race.
Oh, yes, it is. It is, because the concept of oppression according to ideology relates not just to race, but also to gender stuff and sexuality and women's rights, and as it relates to abortion especially, men oppressing women, okay, or Christians oppressing gays. How are they oppressing them? Because it's not safe for them. Why? Because you say homosexuality is evil. Yeah, that's what God says. And whether you agree with it or not, it's what it amounts to is a difference of opinion, but nevertheless, it makes them feel unaccepted and therefore not included, and that's evil, and so they can do bad things back at you in response. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, What are some resources that you'd recommend for going further into this kind of stuff?
Well, there's a series. There is a lecture. Amy may have to help me out now. Who's the guy I draw on for critical race theory, the lectures?
Neil Shenvey.
Yeah, Neil Shenvey. Thank you. Yeah, it was right there at the tip of my tongue. Neil Shenvey. And then Thaddeus, there's a book called... Amy's going to give it to me here. It's written by a Biola guy, and I was
confronting injustice without compromising truth.
You're on top of it, man. You should be running this show, man. You got it all down. Those I would recommend, highly recommend, as resources that will help you to understand more thoroughly what's going on. Now, both of those resources are coming from people who are critics of the movement. All right, but they. And so some might suggest, well, you ought to read People in the Movement, White Fragility, or How to Be an Anti-Racist, like, and that kind of stuff. But those things are pretty hard to wade through. And a lot of times because of the lingo and the way they use the language and all this other things, it's hard to figure out what's wrong with them. So if you read others that can see what's going on and accurately characterize the other person's point of view, they don't twist it like a straw man, well, then you're going to be, I think you're going to be well served. And so I would recommend those two books, especially as a Christian, because what Thaddeus, what's his last name?
Williams.
Well, yeah, Thaddeus Williams. I was reading his book just the other day, but I just remember Thaddeus, so I can't remember the Williams part. But Thaddeus Williams as a deeply committed Christian, he is able to put these things in biblical categories. And he talks about social justice A and social justice B. In other words, how the notion of social justice has been so transformed into something else that it's a totally different thing. All right. And my view is we should even use the word social justice, because it'd be like using the word gay and not referring to homosexuals. People would know what you're talking about. Excuse me. You say, I'm feeling gay today. They're going to think, really? So now you're same-sex attracted, right? The point I'm making is when words change their meanings, like gay and social justice, they don't serve the older purpose anymore. And there was a time when social justice had a noble meaning because Roman Catholics were the ones who coined it. But that's long gone. Now it means something very different. It has been pressed into service by the critical theory crowd, and it means something different. It doesn't mean justice. It doesn't mean justice anymore. In my view, it means paybacks. You answer injustice with injustice, and you even the scorecard, basically. That's the way it seems to me. Now, some people disagree with me, but in any event, my point is that that as Christians, we should be talking about justice, not social justice, but justice and charity, which is love, kindness, those kinds of things. Those are the biblical antidotes to the kinds of things people are seeing in our culture now. What do you think, Cade? Cover enough ground for this call?
I think that was definitely helpful, and I learned a lot over the course of all those different calls. So,
well, I hope others did as well, Cade, and I always appreciate chatting with you.
Well, thanks again, Mr. Kokel.
All
have
right,
a
buddy.
Merry Christmas.
Okay, have a happy Christmas, too. And hi to your family. Let's see, Kylie, right? Your brother?
Kyler.
Okay, like Tyler, but Kyler. Okay, got it. Okay, well... yeah, all the best to you, brother, and have a good time. I hope it snows for you in the Durango on Christmas Day.
Oh, it definitely has.
Okay, sounds good. All right, take care, buddy.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Kokel.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. The reason he calls me Mr. Kokel, by the way, is he's only 14 years old. Yeah, I know, it's hard to believe, isn't it? I've met him a couple of times, most recently in Minneapolis. He and his mom and his family drove all the way from Durango, Colorado, up to Minneapolis, Minnesota, his old stomping grounds, roughly in Minnesota. But all right, we're going to skip the break here and keep moving. Let's go to, is this right? Okay, let's go to New Jersey and Guy. How you doing, Guy?
Mr. Kokel, good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
And it was a beautiful thing listening to that interchange between you two guys. I mean, it's exactly what you, I think, do, that that you profess to be doing, the older generation bringing up the younger generation and training them.
I'm
this young gentleman.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm thrilled to have an impact in his life. It just, when I hear young people like that, that are so articulate and so thoughtful and so well-spoken and so polite, you know, it is an encouraging thing.
It gives me great pause and great encouragement. I can see him being on the radio 20 years from now teaching my grandchildren. So
yeah, hey, there you go. You never know.
Anyway, the reason why I'm calling is, despite the fact that having done your ambassador program and try to do my best at representing our faith as good as I can, I had a conversation with a dear friend who came to me and said he's been going to church and they are pressing him to become a member of the church. Mm-hmm. And one of the conversation came up that if you don't believe in Jesus, you're going to hell. And him and I have had this conversation. But he has now expanded the thought into people that haven't heard of Jesus. And, you know, we talked about creation, screaming God, and,
right,
you know, and all the typical, you know, all the arguments I could think of. And I was exhausted, the thoughts that I had on it, but I just couldn't get his head wrapped around the fact,
sure,
that, you know, and I kept lowering the number. It's a smaller percentage than you think. And, you know, we have to believe in scriptures and, you know, that God is just and God can, you know, God can figure this out because he's more just and has a bigger mind than we do. And I just couldn't get to a satisfactory place with him where he felt that he had a good enough answer to come back to his thinking and get him back on track with, you know, Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. And it was, you know, and part of the problem, if I'm being totally transparent, is these are thoughts I've had 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you know. So, you know, they came back in the middle of the conversation to kind of haunt me a little bit, and I, you know, shaking my head. And it's like, no, I can't, because you get those, you know, to your point, they're like the conversation you just had, you get these other points drummed into your head so deeply that those ghosts come back and haunt you from time to time, despite the intellectual promise and the intellectual evidence and all the things that we study and learn and teach each other and prop each other up, you know, you start having those, I don't want to say, walk back, you know, mindset.
Sure, I gotcha.
You start doubting yourself again.
It's like PTSD, you know, you have a flashback of sort. Well, I'm sympathetic to that. And I had the same kinds of concerns when I was a non-Christian. And even after I became a Christian, it took me a while to kind of get my ducks in a row on this. And there are some issues in which emotionally we have a strong I'm trying to think of the best way to put it, a strong emotional impulse regarding things, all right? And this is where I think asking questions and kind of probing a little bit, looking for points of agreement that a person might offer us that we can build on to answer the question, okay? So there's in the tactics book, I cite a conversation that I had many years ago. I was doing a talk on relativism in a Barnes & Noble bookstore in San Fernando Valley. And after the conversation and Q&A, there was a gentleman who came up and he asked me, he said, why do I need to believe in Jesus? He says, I'm Jewish. I try to live the best way that I can possibly live. And, you know, I do the best I can. So why do I need to believe in your Jesus? And I said, do you mind if I ask you a couple of questions? He said, no, go ahead. I said, do you think, here's the first question, do you think that people who commit moral crimes, who do bad things, ought to be punished? And he said, well, since I'm a prosecuting attorney, yeah. Now, I didn't know he was an attorney, you know, but I got lucky on that one. But most people have this sense that bad people who do bad things ought to be punished. Okay, good. I agree with you, I told him. We're on the same page here. Second question. Have you done any bad things? And I just waited for his response. And he said, well, yeah, I guess I have. I said, so have I. Do you know what I call that? I said, what? I said, bad news. We both agree that people who do bad things ought to be punished for the bad things they do. And we both agree that we've done that. This is not a good situation. Now, notice that those questions were trading on very foundational moral intuitions. and that there is a right and wrong, that we ought to do what's right and we don't.
Right.
So there are three of those, you know, intuitions in play, and everybody has this sense. I was just drawing it out so now I could work with it. All right. So now what do we make? And I just have 2 minutes here, so I'm going to run to the cut to the conclusion here. So what do we make of those who have never heard of the gospel? The question is, and the way it's worded here is about good people in other religions. Where is the good person? Jesus responded to someone who said to him, "Good teacher." He said, "Wait a minute. Nobody is good but God alone." Now, he didn't say he wasn't good. He just made this characterization. Nobody's good but God alone. And we know this intuitively. When we look at the way that we ought to live our life and the way that we live our life, we don't need the Bible for this. We don't need God or Jesus or anything to have this awareness. Anywhere in the world, we know not only something's wrong with the world, but something's wrong with us. We are guilty. That's why we feel guilty. We feel guilty because we are guilty, all right? And so when it comes to good people, really? There are none of them. Okay, now we're back to our equation. And see, this is where you can take these questions and maybe use those with someone you're talking to, like your friend. Okay, what does God do in the final judgment? Chapter 20 of Revelation. God is judging every person according to their deeds. And he's got a book open. It's a big, giant book. I call it the books of death in the story of reality. He's judging everyone according to their deeds. So there is not going to be any person, no matter where they're at, who's going to be able to say, "I am not guilty. I am not worthy of punishment." And then that Revelation 20, that's where they get punished. That's where that event is recorded. Okay, so there's the substance of it. Sorry we got cut short here at the end of the show, but that's the substance of it. And that's how I think you can work to show that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So anyone God sends to hell, he does so justly because they've broken his law. All right, there you go, Guy. Thank you for the call. I sure appreciate it, and happy Christmas to you. That's it for this, our second to the last show of this year. Go out and give them heaven, friends. I'm Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason. Bye-bye now.